Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This should be brief. There's no action. We're in the comment period for Amendment 5, the NEPA comment period. We just wanted to make you all aware. As you know, we've held 8 public hearings from Rockland, Maine to Cape May, New Jersey, and then included another hearing last night. We wanted to provide just a brief summary of some of the comments that were there, and then also encourage council members to start thinking about our decision and options that we're going to select at the June meeting, because that's the time that we're scheduled to make our decision on Amendment 5. So with that being said, Lori, if you're ready, take it away.
Okay. Thank you very much. I will be brief. Probably not as brief as Phil, but I'll try. I'm just going to give you a quick update on where we are with the Amendment 5 public hearings, what the major issues are, and what the timeline will be for hopefully completing this amendment with the June council meeting. In your binders, you will find some of the summaries from the public hearings that we held, along with the written comments that we received during the council's comment period. I'm slightly behind on finishing the rest of the public hearings, so my apologies for not having those for you, but the audios are posted on the website, and I will be providing the transcriptions for the rest of the hearings over the next couple of weeks. So I just kind of wanted to cover a few major issues and get people thinking now about some of the larger decisions that need to be made at the June council meeting. In terms of where we are with the process, as you know, this council spent a lot of time developing a range of management alternatives and options for Amendment 5 to achieve the goals and objectives that we identified for the amendment, specifically to establish a comprehensive catch monitoring program for the Atlantic herring fishery and to implement measures to address bycatch in the fishery. With attention to river herring bycatch. We also identified some goals and objectives for a catch monitoring program, which are in the amendment. And the alternatives and the options that are under consideration have been analyzed in a draft environmental impact statement. As we completed the draft environmental impact statement, we actually had a lot of back and forth with the regional office and a lot of revisions made to the draft EIS. So during that process, in order to give people ample opportunity to review the measures and provide comment, we went ahead and released a draft Amendment 5 document and made that available for public review and comment from about late February until April 19th, last week. And during that comment period, the council's comment period, we conducted 8 public hearings under the Magnuson Act requirements for public hearings during the month of March. So all of the comments that you're seeing in your binder and the public hearing summaries are from the council's Magnuson Act time, comment time. While I was working with the service to finish up the draft EIS. The draft EIS was approved, and the official NEPA 45-day comment period began on April 20th, and that comment period runs until June 4th. So we'll essentially have about 4 months for people to review the measures in Amendment 5 and provide their comments before the council has to make final decisions. We are now in the NEPA 45-day comment period, so the National Marine Fisheries Service is now accepting comments until June 4th. And during this time, the herring advisors, the plan development team, and the committee will all meet to review all the public comments and develop their recommendations for the council to consider. This council is scheduled to select the final measures at the June 19 through 21 meeting. We had really good attendance at all of our public hearings. We did 8 public hearings during the month of March, and they are listed on the screen. We had at least 30 or more people just about at all of them. Some of them were really well attended, over 100 people. And the one in Cape May was a little smaller. It was mostly industry down in Cape May. We had about 15 to 20 people down there. And then, of course, we had a NEPA comment period hearing last night here at the council meeting and had about 15 to 20 in attendance there. I will provide transcripts for all of these hearings. I think the first four are in the binder and the next five will come soon. I'm just going to very generally summarize some of the comments that we've received. And again, this is really general. These are just sort of the big issues. I would encourage all of you, since we do have time between now and the June council meeting, to read the comments, the written comments, and the public hearings to get a much better perspective on what people are concerned about and what their recommendations are. From most of the stakeholders, and I'll say, when I say stakeholders, these are non-herring industry stakeholders that have come to the meetings, whether they be tuna fishermen, recreational fishermen, environmental interests, river herring interests, or other, I would say the majority, and again, I'm speaking generally, the majority of the stakeholder comments support 100% observer coverage on the category A and B herring vessels, which are the limited access directed vessels, the 45 or so vessels in the fishery that catch about 97% or more of the fish. There has been little to no support for this level of observer coverage on the C&D vessels. The comments from most of the stakeholders have definitely differentiated A and B from C&D. A majority of the stakeholders do support implementing some measures to address net slippage. Excuse me. A lot of them support the closed area one sampling provisions along with some sort of trip termination provision. There really isn't unanimous support across the comments for one measure versus another, but general support for closed area one provisions and a trip termination at either 10 events or 5 events. General support for a requirement that dealers weigh all fish, although not a whole lot of specifics in terms of what that actually would mean or how that would be implemented. General support for prohibiting midwater trawl vessels from fishing in the year-round groundfish closed areas. That's been a pretty common recommendation from the majority of stakeholders. And then I did want to note that there haven't been a lot of comments received from anybody regarding the specific river herring management alternatives that are in the document. Aside from general support for the cooperative avoidance project that the industry and SMAST is working on, most people are expressing support for the measures that I already mentioned. And there is some support for establishing a river herring catch cap immediately in this amendment. That's not unanimous across all of the stakeholders, but it is a common recommendation from a lot of them. A lot of people feel that there's already the authority within the plan to allow that to happen in Amendment 5. In terms of the herring industry comments, we have had some good participation at the hearings from some of the industry sectors, not all of them. We have heard from the industry general support for 100% observer coverage as long as the cost is addressed and it can be affordable for the industry. The industry has noted at several of the hearings that they have no problem with 100% observer coverage, but they cannot afford it at the rates that are currently assumed for this region. We did hear from the industry they're willing to pay for observer coverage at rates that are comparable to the West Coast rates. I believe the number that was mentioned at a couple of the public hearings was $325 a day. There were some suggestions made from some of the industry who commented at the meetings that There should be a more thorough review of existing observer data to identify specific problems, whether they be specific bycatch problems or specific vessels that may be encountering bycatch in the fishery on a more regular basis than others. And then some of the industry comments that we received addressed a lot of the other elements of this amendment that many of the stakeholders aren't really providing comments on. So it was good to get comments from the industry supporting some of the proposed FMP adjustments, like the regulatory definitions, the trip notification requirements, and things like that. And I will note that the majority of the industry, and actually the majority of stakeholders, really don't support any changes to the transfer at sea provisions or limiting transfers at sea to any particular permit holders. At the hearings, we've heard from some of the small mesh fishermen in the inshore Gulf of Maine, some of the day boat fishermen. We've heard from the Rhode Island bottom trawl sector that fishes in southern New England, along with some of the mackerel vessels. And we got some comments from Lund's Fisheries down in Cape May that were relatively extensive and addressed sort of all elements of the amendment. Just to cover briefly where we are with the written comments, and most of these are provided, at least an example of each of the comments we've received is provided in your binder. During our comment period, we received almost 41,000 email comments. Thankfully, 35,000 of them were in one email. So that was compiled by the Pew Environment Group, and they did the tally for us, which was very nice. And we also had another email that included 765 comments. And then out of the remaining, 3,024 were a batch email letter, and 585 were another batch email letter. So it just gives you an idea of how many individual or unique comments we may have gotten. This is just in the council's comment period. I anticipate that the service is going to get hit with a lot of comments, probably substantially more than this, during the NEPA comment period. We also received written letters and written email comments from several individuals, groundfish fishermen, tuna fishermen, herring fishermen, recreational fishermen, and other stakeholders. Those are all provided in your binder. Some of the groups that have submitted comments, obviously Pew and Honest Bycatch, a lot of those were the email comments, Earth Justice as well. We received comments from the Massachusetts Commercial Striped Bass Association, Nantucket Anglers Association, the Massachusetts Lobstermen's Association, and the Town of Wellfleet. I may have left some organizations out, and I apologize if I did. And we've received written comments from the industry, from Lund's Fisheries, the Rhode Island Bottom Trawl Fleet, and NORPEL. And those are all in the binder for you to take a look at. I would encourage you to read all of the individual comments because a lot of them address some of the more minor elements of the amendment that aren't covered by the majority of the stakeholder comments. And then I'll just leave you with sort of a timeline of where we go from here. The comment period is open until June 4th. We've already had an enforcement committee meeting March 22nd, so the enforcement committee did review the measures and provided a report, which will be considered for final decision-making. And then I've gone ahead and scheduled the following meetings to try to get this process through to the June council meeting. We have scheduled a joint herring plan development team and mackerel FMAT meeting in Providence on May 22nd. I just want to note for those who are following the mackerel amendment, and we've all recognized the need to coordinate these two amendments, the mackerel amendment and the herring amendment right now are on the same timeline for public comment. It's Amendment 14 for mackerel, Amendment 5 for herring. Both comment periods end on June 4th. So we will be having a joint technical meeting to take a look at recommendations relative to both amendments. The herring advisors are meeting in Peabody on May 31st to make their recommendations. The committee is meeting in Plymouth on June 3rd. Apologies for scheduling this during the herring stock assessment week, but meeting dates are really hard to come by, and I think it's imperative that the committee meets as close to the end of the comment period or at the end of the comment period as possible so that we can review all of the comments, and also before the Mid-Atlantic Council meeting. The Mid-Atlantic Council will be selecting the final measures for the mackerel amendment June 12th through 14th, and then we follow up a week later with the final selection of measures for the herring amendment June 19th through 21. Is that my final? And that's it. That's a general overview. I would just encourage everybody to sort of consider what the big issues are going to be for final decision making, and we have 6 weeks right now to work with the committee, the advisors, and the technical folks to try to hammer out the details of what needs to be done at that June council meeting to make the final decisions on the amendment. So if anybody has any questions or any suggestions, I'd be happy to try to address them.
Doug.
Just a quick clarification. There is a typo up there that it's June 6th is a herring oversight committee meeting, in case people are concerned about that. But
we were just discussing that we may have to extend the council meeting a day or two just to cover the herring amendment. David.
Yeah, I have another suggestion. From my chairing the public hearing in Fairhaven and in Plymouth and being present at the Gloucester public hearing that was chaired by Doug, it was clear to me that there is a lack of understanding as to some of the data that is in the plan, especially in all of the different appendices. So I would encourage all council members to take a look at that information in those appendices regarding information we have in hand, facts and figures, so to speak, so that you'll be better able to separate out what we know from some passions that have been expressed rather strongly regarding the nature of this fishery. Everyone is entitled to their perspective, clearly, and those perspectives have been stated loudly and clearly. And a lot of lobbying has been done to get people to step up to the plate and express their point of view. But, once again, it's important to know what's in that plan, in particular in those appendices where a lot of work was done by Laurie and the plan development team and others to give us, again, what we know and what we don't know and what we think we know. So please pay attention to those documents. They're very important, and they will help all of us as we work through this this amendment that's been a long time in the making.
Dave Gatham.
Yes. Without getting into specifics, because I don't think that's where we want to go today, it's my hope that both the PDT and the committee will come back with whatever options they recommend fully fleshed out. So, for example, if they should request some level of observer coverage, that the nuts and bolts of that be fleshed out as we're trying to do in groundfish right now. So, for example, if the industry is paying for it, what are they paying for? What part of the observer are they paying for? Are they paying, just for the actual hourly rate for the observer on the boat? Are they covering overtime and all the other things that have been listed in groundfish? Are we if it's observers again, are we requiring at-sea monitor type coverage, or are we requiring NEFOP type coverage? Because they both come with different costs associated with them. And if we are requiring either one, what are their duties going to be? What exactly do you want these people to do? None of this is spelled out in the amendment. I have read all the public comments, and there's really only a very few handful of people that have even started to address the real nuts and bolts issues associated with this amendment. And like David said, there's a lot of passion, but there's not a lot of substance in most of the comments. With the river herring, the workability of these options. I think the reason people aren't commenting on them is because they can't really wrap their heads around them. With the consequence closures, as an example, what exactly, you know, what are you going to do if the areas you close aren't the areas where the herring are? I think there's one letter here that addresses that subject very, very clearly.
I mean, I think you got to keep it in general because, you know, the document is the NEPA comment period is still open. We're not supposed to be discussing.
I'm providing things that I think the PDT is going to have to address in order for us to have a meaningful June meeting, unless you want to have a week-long, three-day council meeting where we have to address all these issues motion by motion. That's all I'm suggesting.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I do appreciate David Pierce's comments because I had noticed a similar thing in the public hearings that I had attended, that there's little understanding of the impacts to the herring fishery or the analysis that's in the document. So I would encourage people prior to either coming to the committee meeting or the council meeting in June to please read through the document. The PDT has spent a long time putting that information together, and I would hope that decisions that we make are based on that information. That's what it's been prepared for, and I hope that everybody reads through it. The other thing I wanted to comment on is the timing of the committee meeting is in the middle of the SARC, as Lori indicated. And, you know, I've gone to every stock assessment for herring for the past 15 years, and I'm very unhappy about the fact that we had time to figure out when to have a committee meeting. And then the date we choose, the dates that we polled for, 1 week was the week in which the stock assessment is taking place, and the other week was the week the Mid-Atlantic Council is meeting. And I just find that unacceptable. I'm just really not happy about that. I mean, we spend so much time encouraging people to, you know, understand the science, participate in the process, and I certainly have been one who have always advocated that and done so. And, you know, I think we asked the Science Center, would they consider changing the schedule on the SARC? And, of course, they came back and said, no, we're not going to do that. You know, we're paying for independent peer-reviewed scientists to come to New England to participate in the process, and they're not going to move it around for a committee meeting for the council, which, I mean, I feel the council had more than an adequate opportunity to choose a different time. And I just really wanted to be sure to express my significant displeasure with the outcome of that.
Jim.
Thanks. I'd just like to try to explain the dates for the SARC and how we arrived at that. We would try to move things around if we try to make any reasonable changes that we can to accommodate people. The way the SARC works, it's a process that goes in three steps, and each of the assessments gets evaluated over about a three-day period, and they keep coming back. So each of the stocks begins on day one, essentially, and then it gets comes back on day two for further consideration, and then day three for other things. And we found that this is the best way for the reviewers to actually grasp all the detailed issues and ask all the questions that they need to understand. We also made adjustments to the timing of the meeting to accommodate the chairman, who has been appointed by your council from your SSC, and he had special restrictions due to his travel. So we did adjust the schedule for the SARC to accommodate the chairman. And also, the meeting itself involves a large number of people who put the assessment together, and for their own planning purposes and their own travel as well on the working group members, they're all basically planning for that week. So for all of those reasons, that's why the schedule has been set. And the dates for the meeting were set probably 9 months ago for that week, and then the micro-adjusting the changes like from one day to the next were made a few months ago to accommodate the chairman. So I just wanted, we don't want to exclude anybody, and we tried to be inclusive, but I thought it was important now at least to try to explain why we have the schedule when it is. And I really hope that there are no hard feelings given the explanation that I've provided.
Jim, I think that if I understand it, and I stuck my nose into the issue too, at having been requested to do so, was more a question of scheduling on our side than yours. There was a subsequent request to you to see if days could get moved around, just so that it might make it better for people wanting to do the herring thing. And, you know, quite frankly, I think it's a situation where we had an abbreviated, you know, if you look at what's going on, somewhat abbreviated schedule, and other times that would have been available would have had fewer members, if my understanding is correct, fewer members of the committee there. So, you know, it's not ideal. I think people recognize that, but we've got so many things that we're juggling, and I think there are going to be times when there are just unavoidable conflicts, and I think, you know, nobody says that's the ideal way to do it, but we've got to continue to try and move things ahead. And Laurie?
Not to get into too long of a discussion, but I did, when we did poll, we polled for the first and second week in June, recognizing that the comment period was going to end sometime right at the beginning of June. And I scheduled the advisors for May 31st, the week before. There are trade-offs for selecting, pros and cons to selecting just about any date. In those first 2 weeks in June, June 6th happens to be the only day that all the committee members indicated that they could attend. So we wanted to pick a date that was hopefully after the comment period ended on June 4th, because the majority of people submit their comments on June 4th. Whatever the last day of the comment period is, that's when we get a flood of written comments or things like that. So we didn't want to have the committee meeting too far ahead of the end of the comment period and not have the committee have the advantage of having, you know, the more thoughtful written letters that address some of the details and things like that available. And we also wanted to have the advisors have a chance to meet and provide a written report to the committee, and we also wanted to do it before the Mid-Atlantic Council meeting. So that's how we ended up in this narrow window and selected the day where all the committee members could attend, and we at least had the best chance for full attendance. The only other option at this point that I have would be to move it to make the advisors and committee back-to-back on May 30th and 31st. But, again, it's before the end of the comment period. The committee may miss any written comments that are submitted at the end of the comment period, and there will not be a time to provide a written report from the advisors to the committee. And on this particular issue, I felt that it was probably important enough to spend some time with the advisory panel chairman actually writing a report with specific recommendations that he could use to report to the committee. So that is really the only other option, and if there's, you know, really strong interest in that, I can re-poll, but the trade-offs are that you might lose a lot of written comments and you're not going to have a written report from the advisors.
Doug, anything else under Herring?
Only to say that I felt as a chair that it was important that we have full participation of our committee for such an important amendment, and that's why I supported where we went, recognizing that clearly there was a conflict going on here. But so other than that, I have nothing else to
thank you. Under other business, I know we have one item that was requested by Sally.